Welcome to another edition of Thinking Like a Lawyer.
Thanks,
I'm Joe Patrice.
Much.
Yeah, no, but that. Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
You welcomed me and I responded in kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm Joe Patrice from Above the Law. I am joined.
Nice to
by
meet you.
Chris, So I'm joined by Chris Williams and Catherine. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
Catherine Rubino. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Joe Patrice.
Okay.
I thought it was Patrice this whole time.
We are here to discuss some of the big stories in the legal industry of the last week, and, you know, hopefully have some fun nuggets to drop along the way. But first, we will begin, as we always do, by having a little ease you into the conversation by not jumping all the way into the heavy legal talk and have a little bit of small talk.
Small talk.
All right. So, small talk. I am still recovering from an illness, so I'm not feeling my best.
That doesn't sound like fun.
It does not. It does not feel very fun. I've renewed my lifelong relationship with NyQuil, which has always been there for me and continues. Maybe has anybody reached out to see if they're willing to sponsor the show? So
I have a quick recommendation.
Oh, yeah?
This might be outside of your musical wheelhouse, but the next time you pour out some NyQuil, I need you to play Codeine Crazy by Future.
Nice. You know? Yeah. I mean, there is not codeine in NyQuil, but fair enough.
Well, you have the wrong NyQuil plug. No.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm not feeling the best. How's everybody else doing?
I mean, I am 39 weeks pregnant, so that's how I feel. I feel that is descriptive in and of itself.
So, so not going to be on next week's show is what you're thinking.
that is the plan.
Fair enough. We'll hold down the fort without you. So, yeah. Anything else? Anybody?
Well, I'm doing phenomenal.
Good. Well, that's super.
Yeah. Good. One out of three ain't bad.
Yeah, you know, I was like, I knew y'all were having shitty weeks. I figured I should live it up a little bit, carry the social load. You know, it's because I care. I did a cycling trip in Cambodia. Saw some of the... Saw some fields, saw people growing taro, which is usually just a flavor that I get when I get bubble tea. It's like this purple thing.
Right, right, right.
But like seeing the actual root of it, I was like, oh, that looks disgusting. it's a tuber. I found that out today. Would not have expected that. And then earlier today, I went to a spin class because it, you know, it's only felt like 2 years since I've been on a bike. But
after cycling, you absolutely would need a spin class.
Yeah, you know, I figured just double down on the pain. You know, there's a thing where it's like, when growing up, I always thought like pirates talking about sea legs, that sounds dumb. But then after doing cycling, I was like, I got like bike butt. And now it just makes total sense. Like I didn't have calluses on my ass, but I guess it was just like a spiritual padding that went away. Hopefully I can like, you know, pedal back to it.
Nice. So with all of our showing a little bit of personality aside, let's get into the real meat of the discussion. The story that we continue to wish would go away, but seems as though it never will. Since the last time we talked about it, there have been more Clarence Thomas ethics scandals.
Jeepers, like literally, this is maybe our longest running story on this show.
I was thinking that, actually. I haven't gone back to calculate whether or not we had to talk about Yale's stupid FedSoc-inspired free speech crisis nonsense or this. But
I think it's got to be this, because there keep on being new things. Not just like, oh, well, more people are talking about it, which was a lot of the Yale thing, where it's just kind of new parties wading into the existing controversy. Whereas this time, it's literally seems like every other day we wake up and there's more data, there's more information, there's more revelations. Someone else is trying to, you know, turn the screws on Clarence Thomas.
So let's take a step back and just catch folks up. So I believe the last episode where we talked about this, we already had the $500,000 in vacations and payments
that.
That
was early.
Right, yes. And we'd already had the billionaire buys his Clarence Thomas's mom's house and lets her live there rent free while improving it.
Right,
as a friend does.
As friends do. And all of that happening while not being disclosed and while the billionaires' organizations had business in front of the court. Mm-hmm. So, and Thomas had already said at this point that he just didn't know that you needed to disclose that stuff. And some friends of his had told him that it was okay. I believe that's where we left things as far as this show's coverage. What has happened since?
There's a couple of things.
Yeah,
not just
there are
one.
There are a few. Yes, let me go ahead, people. Any of
we
you?
We also found out that Clarence Thomas's grand nephew, that he and Ginny Thomas are raising, quote, as a son, are raised. He's now in his 30s. Got his tuition paid for by one Harlan Crow.
Okay, so the same super friend was also paying.
Maybe we all have a friend
tuition.
Like Harlan Crow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Except you listening judges.
Yeah. So that's happening. So that's the only thing. Surely that's the only thing that happened.
LOL.
Okay. So not the only ethical thing that happened. So what else has happened?
We also, there was more revelations that Leonard Leo, who was, you know, of FedSoc fame or infamy, as the case may be, also directed additional payments to Ginny Thomas for her advocacy work for matters that were shortly to be before the court. And in that paperwork, in that effort, specifically directed to leave off any mention of Ginny Thomas.
So what happens here is that the former executive director of the Federalist Society was paying Ginny Thomas for consulting work, but wanted it not to be noticeable that he was doing this. So he said no mention of Ginny, of course, and funneled these payments through a random pollster who happened to be
Kellyanne Conway.
So, okay. So now we've got Kellyanne Conway as a bag man in between the head of the Federalist Society and giving money under the table to Ginny Thomas.
Can I also just say, like, you know, just in terms of comedy factor, creating a paper trail in an effort to not create a paper trail is really, that's a high level of difficulty.
Fair enough. So, all right. So,
we get deeper in the weeds, I just have a explain to me like I'm five question. So, can we call it bribery yet? Or is everybody still buying the friend excuse?
Well, so nothing here is, I don't think anything here is bribery to the extent that Clarence Thomas is going to rule in all these people's favors anyway. What we have here, though, is some degree of politely referred to as something more like graft. We've got
ethics problems.
Yeah, still ethics
problems.
We
have disclosure violations.
We have disclosure violations, which are the most important aspect of this, because while you can't remove a justice from the Supreme Court without impeaching them, which I can...
It's not happen.
I can count the House members and the number of senators involved, and that's not happening. It is still, however, at least a civilly pursuable crime for a government official to screw up their financial disclosures. Mm-hmm. So if you have a situation where somebody has failed to disclose something they're legally required to disclose, and they've done this in a willful manner, it's a $50,000 for the violation.
Although I imagine that willful standard is going to be what folks grapple with moving forward.
So we already have had Thomas's excuse for all of this is that he had been told by, you know,
He has friends. Told him don't write that down.
Friends who told him he didn't have to, so therefore it means that he didn't willfully do this. So surely that is all that's happened since the last time we talked about this, right?
Dun dun dun.
It is not the only thing that's happened since then. So the following up on all of this, now we have learned that in 2012 there was a complaint raised by a federal judge with the Judicial Conference of the United States, which is the entity that is supposed to investigate these issues. And this complaint was about the fact that the year before, there had been reports raised with the Financial Disclosures Committee of the Judicial Conference that Clarence Thomas was not reporting Ginny Thomas' income that she was making. Mm-hmm. This becomes very relevant. So given that failure to disclose, Thomas was investigated by the Financial Disclosures Committee, who then didn't report the results of that investigation up to the rest of the judicial conference.
That doesn't seem great.
And so this was only discovered by one federal judge who was on the committee, or not on the committee, but on the judicial conference at large, because he was the chief judge of the district at the time. And he raised several complaints and protests with the committee, saying, you don't get to just say you're blowing off this investigation. You have to report the results to the rest of the conference. He wasn't even like going after Thomas. He's just like, propriety requires you to report. And they said they didn't have to report because they decided it wasn't willful.
So as of 2012.
So as of over a decade ago, Clarence Thomas was told that you have to report Jenny Thomas's, at least report Jenny Thomas's income that she's getting, and that he was allowed to skate on that failure under the argument that he didn't know any better. Meaning, from my perspective, that would seem to mean that he cannot, 11 years later, make the argument that he didn't know he was supposed to report it if he already has used the excuse, I didn't know I had to report it, and that was his reason he didn't get slammed back then.
Wait, this is a Dave Chappelle bit.
So,
I think there was a stand-up. I think I might have been Killing Them Softly. Dave Chappelle says that there was a white guy and his black friend driving down. White guy gets pulled over by the police, tells him he was speeding. White guy says, oh, I didn't know I can do that. Drives off. Black guy in the passenger seat is shocked. Didn't know you can do that? White guy's like, that's the thing. I knew the entire time.
Yeah. You know.
No, I was just going to say that it is interesting, and there is a slight difference, I suppose, in money that Jenny Thomas gets and may or may not have to report as a member of Clarence Thomas's household, and the direct gifts that Clarence Thomas is receiving from Harlan Crowe, whether they be tuition payments, luxury vacations, or a free house for his mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's also a timing issue. So putting aside the willfulness, how this complicates any willfulness defense, mm-hmm. There's a timing issue that's a little curious, because the issue that had brought this to the judicial conference in 2011, which then led to the judge's complaints being lodged in 2012. Mm-hmm. The issue in 2011 was that Clarence Thomas had not reported Ginny's income. This is important because that Leonard Leo revelation was in 2012.
Right. 2012 is when Leonard Leo is like, no mention of Ginny.
So in 2012, after Thomas has been put, you know, on notice that this is a problem, it is the year later that the response of the conservative legal movement is to try to
just hide
pay
the money.
People
just hide the money.
Hidden, yes, yeah. Under the table. I mean, this is a wild series of revelations, and wild partially because it's taken so long to unravel, and also partially back to what you said earlier about creating a paper trail, how completely terribly they mm-hmm. did this. Like, this is comically
although it
stupid.
Took over a decade for it to come out, so yeah. Maybe that was enough, because now we have a completely spineless Congress that won't do anything about it, so maybe they waited just long enough.
I mean, well, put aside the Congress, at this point, the judicial conference, the spotlight now has to be on the judicial conference, given that they didn't do anything 11 years ago, and given that their reasoning then was, we assume he didn't know any better. They now don't really have any excuse not to refer this matter. And the proper procedure is that if they have reason to believe that he knew better and then didn't disclose this information, they are supposed to refer this matter to the Attorney General's mm-hmm. office. So Merrick Garland should be getting a message from the judicial conference to begin an investigation and prosecution, a civil case, but of these claims. Will that happen? I mean, I'm certainly skeptical.
I'm skeptical about everything at this point. I don't think anything will be done. And I think that kind of just proves the utter impotency of our system.
Yeah. Impotency? Is that a word? Yeah, I guess it is.
Why wouldn't it
yeah,
be?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's right. I don't know. Like, I just, in my head, I was just like, the impotence of the system. But yeah, I guess it would be impotency. Yeah. Anyway.
I believe this word. You certainly know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got a real bad system, folks.
Yeah.
Real bad.
Well, and we, yeah. So, but this does at least take it slightly out of the hands, theoretically, of Congress doing anything to the judicial conference now, because they it's real hard for them to get out of it, given mm-hmm. what's the revelation. The story was broken by Bloomberg. Zoe Tillman over there broke this right at the end of the week last week. And yeah, now the spotlight's on them.
I mean, the sort of minorly hopeful point in that story is that, you know, it was a Reagan appointee, right? Judge Wolf, yeah. who was really upset about it not being reported. And I do think that there is a certain extent to which these ethics issues are sort of nonpartisan, at least in sort or of true believers, they definitely should be. Okay, one definitely should be. I think that there are plenty of judges currently on the federal bench who believe that.
Yeah,
it's a matter of finding them. Yeah, I'll give you a hint: they were not appointed by Trump.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know as though you can paint that brush completely, but certainly there are a lot of them that wouldn't care as much about that, but.
Have we had any Supreme Court justices that have been sued civilly over things that happened while they were on the court?
I mean, not that I know of. I mean, like the most high profile ethics scandal of this nature
was
Abe Fortas stepping down. And that was a situation where he actively, you know, he took the initiative to step down to protect the court's reputation.
Yeah, we use good old fashioned shame.
Yeah. And the really ridiculous thing is I'm not, like, as the years go by, I'm not altogether sure everything he did wasn't all that bad, but still.
I think that just suffers by comparison, right?
Exactly. It's not, oh, yeah. It's not no, it I totally good. Agree. Yeah. It really I mean, gives. Yeah.
If Abe Fortas were here, he would be, yeah.
Yeah. Generate quality briefs, memos, and redlines in minutes with Callidus AI. You enter the case's facts, then Callidus suggests bodies of law, statutes, and precedents. You tell it if those are relevant, and Callidus generates a well-cited, well-formatted document. You can trust what went into it because you put it there. Be exceptionally productive with better outcomes using Legal's most advanced AI platform. Just 3 minutes from registration to results. Get $90 off your first 2 months. Use promo code Joe at CallidusAI.com. That's CallidusAI.com.
Hey, Gee, what's up?
Just having some lunch, Conrad.
Hey, Gee, do you see that billboard out there?
Oh, you mean that guy out there in the gray suit?
Yeah, the gray suit guy.
Order up. There's all those beautiful, rich, leather-bound books in the background.
That is exactly the one. That's J.D. McGuffin at law. He'll fight for you!
I bet you he has got so many years of experience.
Like decades and decades. And I bet, Gee, I bet he even went to a law school.
Are you a lawyer? Do you suffer from dull marketing and a lack of positioning in a crowded legal marketplace? Sit down with Gee and Conrad for Lunch Hour Legal Marketing on the Legal Talk Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Okay, so let's talk about a law firm that is not had the best week.
Yeah, Lewis Brisbois is losing over 120 attorneys.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first, I will give you sort of my perspective.
Okay.
Our colleague Stacey Zareski broke this story. Over 100 and some odd lawyers are leaving the big law firm to go to a boutique. And I thought this was going to be really terrible for the firm, et cetera. And it's not great. But they have 1,700 attorneys.
Yes. It is a very big firm.
This is not like a significant percentage of the attorneys at the firm.
It is a big firm. That is fair. But, you know, it is a firm that... This is a real kick, though. It is a firm that is California is its home base. Mm-hmm. This is where they are losing this labor and employment, massive amount of labor and employment attorneys. Barber had left. Barber Rennan is the new firm that's focusing on this. They have left. The fallout of this has been that the chair and co-founder has now stepped down. to, you know, over all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably signals how big a deal the firm does consider it. And I think you're right in that sense that the chair felt it was, you know, necessary to fall on their sword over it.
Yeah. And I mean, there's continuing fallout. I did see that there's new reports of profitability problems.
Sure.
There's a practice. There's some rate issues. So it looks like there were some financial problems that need to be cleared up, and that probably is what motivated a lot of this.
Sure.
But, you know, it speaks to, in a world in which we're talking a lot about, how do I put this? We're talking a lot about this fear of recession that people are continuing to wax about, and concerns that, you know, layoffs are going to happen and so on. We just saw a bunch of people leave the relative safety of a large firm to strike out and create a firm that it's almost safe to say they skipped the whole boutique phase and are moving directly into being their own kind of big law firm. And in comments that the founder, Barbara, gave, they look to continue to expand even after this.
Sure. I mean, I will say, though, you know, despite the kind of comments that we've heard mm-hmm. in the press about profitability and concerns that folks had about Lewis Brisbois, I will say it's still, you know, the Am Law 100 numbers have come out for last year. Still a firm ranked in the top 100. I think they fell slightly from 66 to 70. Mm-hmm. Not a big tumble. Wouldn't call it a tumble. So, you know, it's still a profitable firm by a lot of measures, but there are obviously some internal disputes there.
Yeah.
It's wild that you can lose like 8% of your people and still be that big.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, they do have a lot of folks. They have a lot of offices. Mm-hmm. It's really a question of like how critical is, because you can have a lot of offices and a lot of people, and they, you know, not all partnerships are made equal.
Sure.
And how much is this labor employment practice of basically up and down the West Coast matter to the core of what mm-hmm. Lewis Brisbois is doing, you know? And that's what we're going to find out. And obviously this is going to trigger an instance where I think the first order of business of the leadership now is to find some labor and employment groups.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it's going to be because they're going to need to shore that up and try to hold on to as much business as they can in that area. All right. So closing us out today, Chris, you covered a new law that the folks in Florida were pushing, but while it had general government, general political overtones, you kind of zeroed in on there are some legal industry aspects to the latest DeSantis laws.
Yeah, so there was a part of the law that specifically targeted DACA attorneys, saying I think it kicks in, going off memory, I want to say like 2025 or so.
Well, wait. Well, just step back. What it does is it's a law that they passed as an attempt to lash out, right? An anti-immigration law that's mm-hmm. lashing out, saying that people who are in the United States by virtue of the DACA protections, so children, you know, who came to the country without, you know, not of their free will necessarily, but were brought here undocumented and have, you know, worked their way through the DACA program, it says that those folks aren't allowed to get professional get licenses or work in the state of Florida. And part of that then is the legal aspect. So go forward from that. I was just providing more overarching context.
Okay. So are you not saying the part where it's like lawyers who...
That's your story.
The law is general. I'm giving that context so people know that.
Yes.
Then the part that you actually zeroed in on that makes your story interesting is that there's a lawyer thing.
Yeah. I thought that's what I was saying. I'm sorry. I was confused for a second. Yeah. So I wish the viewers could see the frustration. Anyway, so that happened. Would you like to see what happened, Joe?
No, you do. That's what you're here for.
I don't want to say it wrong. No. So Ron DeSantis doing a ploy to get popularity. Says he wants to do a presidential run, you know, because he has to just have something in the back pocket to beat Trump. He's like, you know how like Republicans have this go hard on crime thing, which like lapses into being hard on immigrants. That's basically what's happening here. So, you know, like there were lawyers who went through the suffering of, you know, going through tort and contract law and all that BS that we all have to do. They're highly qualified. And by virtue of being here under DACA, they're like, nah, you can't work here. And it's ridiculous because it's happening at a time when Florida's in need of lawyers. You think they wouldn't cut out an entire class of capable attorneys because somebody might want to do a presidential run. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. The this law is fairly sweeping. I mean, it says that they're not even going to honor driver's licenses issued in other states. Good luck with the full faith and credit issue right there. But yeah, no, it we already have a problem with licensing regimes across this country anyway. Now this attempt to try and say that people who have already fulfilled all of the pre-existing requirements not be allowed to have their license, which is how this seems to read. It's difficult to understand how you can retroactively take away somebody's license that way. That seems very ex post facto. If their argument is just that you're not letting people do this go forward, that, I guess, kind of works. But then it raises questions what happens when they get licensed in states that have reciprocity with Florida. Are they not going to honor that? That seems right. Like an equal protection problem. It's real difficult to see how they get around this in any kind of legal way. Not that, as you pointed out, it really matters. It's not like DeSantis is doing this as a policy matter as much as a signaling matter.
Well, right.
Is pissing off Disney not enough?
Yeah, right. I mean, right.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He's not doing things for the benefit of Floridians. Otherwise, he wouldn't be going for one of the largest employers in the state, right? Yeah. He's already signaled he doesn't care about Floridians. He cares about his own personal nationwide reputation and his ability to run for a nationwide office, which, you know, has its own problems.
Yeah, I will say I did see earlier just a few minutes ago, I saw somebody say that the Wall Street Journal has now come out against DeSantis, calling him weak. And yeah, it strikes me as though once you've lost them, you've certainly lost that Trump alternative mouthpiece.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. They were supporting Clarence after his 20 years of law breaking. So for them to be like, nah, DeSantis is not enough, that's wild.
Yeah. But no, that is something to be looking at. And it's also something that has broader implications, too, because while DeSantis may be floundering in his own presidential ambitions, this seems troublingly like a blueprint for somebody who is trying to shore up what they want to do. And so these sorts of future restrictions on folks who have actually gone through the legal process to be licensed does matter.
I don't know if this is anybody else, but whenever I see like Trump and like say Ron DeSantis or whoever like is trying to appeal to the alt-right and like religious zealots, I just think about Mitt Romney. I hope he's doing well. You know, like he seems to have some common sense, you know, and it's like, ugh, good old Mitt.
That's how quickly things have gotten super bad. Is that we long for the days of Mitt Romney.
You remember people started to wonder
Republican what Republican standard bearer.
Right. People started to wonder what George Bush was doing at parts of the Trump presidency. The younger one, yeah. You know.
Right. It is an ongoing struggle to figure out where the bottom is. We'll see.
We'll get there.
Will we?
If not, we've got shovels.
Yeah. Speaking of DeSantis and Disney, just kind of as a random aside, did anybody see that their latest assault on that is they're going to try to not nationalize, whatever the state equivalent of statatize the monorail at Disney World? Jesus.
Which is safer and gets more inspections than actual state transportation.
Yeah, they're going to try to seize control of the monorail as an effort. It just, you know,
first of all, monorail certainly has the tradition of being the like epitome of Disney Transpo. But now that the Skyliner is back at Disney World, that's not even the coolness anymore.
Yeah, but it doesn't go to as many places, so you've gotta.
Well, it goes to as many parks, right? Because you can get to both Hollywood Studios and Epcot by Skyliner. And I think it's two different sets of hotels it goes to versus the three. But they're all the deluxe, whereas the Skyliner has a moderate and a... Okay, you don't care.
I will say it, because it is hard for me to miss out on a chance to slander St. Louis. Disney has a better transit system than some states.
Yeah,
correct.
That's wild. Like, I will take the monorail over, you know, light rail, whatever St. Louis has. I try to repress most of it, but I stand by it.
I mean, it could have been better. I gather I saw something a few years ago that Walt Disney actually offered the state of Florida that he would just build the monorail to the city so that you can go directly from Orlando in, and like he would replace their whole public transit system there with monorails, and they said no. So,
I mean, that wound up probably being for the best for Walt Disney Corporation, because now they have a small army of different hotel options,
which
is a benefit to staying on Disney property versus off property, as you have all these transpo.
I guess, but it also would have made it much easier to statize, not that it seems like they have any blockades to it now. All right. Well, anyway, that will conclude this weirdly Disney focused podcast.
Maybe
there.
The end.
Just, yeah. I mean, but it got way, way more into the weeds than anybody cares about. So we'll conclude for now and say thanks everybody for listening. You should subscribe to the show, get new episodes when they come out. You should leave reviews, stars, write something. It helps. You should be listening to other shows on the Legal Talk Network. You can check out The Jabot, a show that Catherine hosts. You can check out the Legal Tech Week Journalist Roundtable, which I'm a panelist on. You can follow Above the Law and read all of the stories that we write, these and others, and hear about them before we talk about them. You can follow us on social media. The blog is at ATL Blog. On Twitter, I'm at Joseph Patrice. Catherine's at Catherine1, which is the numeral one. Chris is at Rights for Rent, which is rights as in put pen to paper, not legal rights. And you should be, you know, what else? Anything else? No, I think I did that. Yeah, I did that out of order. So I think we're done.
Bye.
If you're a lawyer running a solo or small firm and you're looking for other lawyers to talk through issues you're currently facing in your practice, join the Unbillable Hours Community Roundtable, a free virtual event on the third Thursday of every month. Lawyers from all over the country come together and meet with me, lawyer and law firm management consultant Christopher T. Anderson, to discuss best practices on topics such as marketing, client acquisition, hiring and firing, and time management. The conversation is free to join, but requires a simple reservation. The link to RSVP can be found on the Unbillable Hour page at LegalTalkNetwork.com. We'll see you there.